All right, welcome everyone to today's Google Search Central SEO Office Hours Hangout. Maybe we should call these not office hours anymore since we're not in the office, but anyway, it's a hangout for SEO. Thank you all for joining. I'm John Mueller. I am a search advocate on the Google Search Relations team, and part of what we do are these not office hours hangouts. Where people can join in and ask their questions around search. A bunch of questions were submitted already on YouTube, so we can go through some of those. But as always, I try to find some people who are willing to jump in and ask the first couple questions. And it looks like a bunch of people already raised their hands, so maybe we'll just run through some of those and then go to some of the submitted questions as well. All right, Ratnesh, I think.
Very good morning, and thank you, John. So I have a very common question discussed many times. In fact, a lot of companies are also. So the question is on link building practices. So like we approached many company and big companies. So they say that, OK, they will charge thousands of dollars or ten thousands of dollars to get the link, do follow link, no follow link from the home page or the from the news sites and the stuff like that. And they also talk a lot of stuff about links, like we should get a high authority, do follow link and stuff like that. So we do not know like what we should do now. I mean, and they also showcase that, okay, see, this is a site which is ranking high on the Google, and they have taken our service and they have paid us. So if you pay us, then your site will also rank, because we are going to put your site backlink with the good article on the home page or XYZ. So I mean, we do not know, like, okay, I don't think that it is wise to put money in such practices or not. Like, what are your opinion? Like, what are your final wordings? And one more thing, like, there are a lot of people over YouTube and they're writing a lot of blogs also. Like, these are the best link building practices. You do this, and you do like that. And they are charging a lot of money. But we don't want to engage in such stuff like that. So we just want to know, like, okay, what we should do now.
What you should do now? I think that's a super complicated question, because there's no one answer for everyone. So I think, first of all, like you probably recognized, artificially building links, dropping links on other sites, buying links, all of that is against the Webmaster Guidelines. And we take action on that algorithmically. We take action on that manually. And the actions that we take include demoting the site that is buying the links, demoting the site that is selling the links. Sometimes we also take more subtle action in that we just ignore all of those links. For example, if we recognize that a site is regularly selling links, but they also have other things around that, then we often go in and say, OK, we will ignore all links on this website. And that basically means, like, a lot of these sites are things where people still sell links, because if they can sell it and they find a seller, then of course they'll try to do that. But those links have absolutely no effect. So that seems like a big waste of time from my point of view. That said, I do think there are ways that you can approach the topic of links in a way that is less black hat, where you're buying links from other sites, but where you're actually kind of actively creating content that you know will attract links, and then going out and reaching out to other sites and saying, hey, we have this interesting content. Don't you want to take a look at it? And kind of encouraging them to link to your site, but without this kind of exchange of value, exchange of money, all of that. And that's something where some people are very experienced in doing that, and they can really kind of guide you to find those topic areas that are interesting for other people. where if you're selling refrigerators, then obviously a category page of refrigerators is not going to be very interesting for other people. But if you can create a survey around refrigerators that is somehow fascinating to others, then that's something that's a lot more interesting for people, where they say, oh, it's like, here's this really cool survey about refrigerators. Did you know that they were like this, or they were invented like this, or whatever? That's the kind of thing where you're creating something that other people find interesting, that other people want to link to. And from my point of view, that's the kind of link building that I have less of an issue with, because you're creating something, other people are linking to it because of what you've created. But it's not that other people are linking to your content because you're giving them money to do that, or because you have kind of these backdoor relationships with the other side. So that's kind of the direction I would take there. And just like random SEO companies that promise you to rank higher just by buying links from them, that's something I would really shy away from. Like with anything in business, if it seems like a shortcut that doesn't really have any long-term value, then probably it doesn't have any long-term value. So that's something that I would definitely stay away from. The other thing also with a lot of these paid link situations is it's very easy to run into a situation where you go off and buy links for a longer time, and then at some point, the web spam team or the algorithm takes an action on your website, and cleaning that up is super hard. And that's something where I would recommend trying to avoid kind of this situation where you're building all of this risk for your business when you could be building something that is useful for your business.
I got your good answers, and the things are clear to me, John. And thanks a lot for sure. Such a wonderful answer.
Thanks. All right, Akash.
Hi, John. Hi.
Hi.
So my question is regarding like Paginated. Like few weeks back, we had a talk regarding like RHEL Next and RHEL PU. So we have actually come up with a new solution. Like we are trying to use like a class reference and the reference links.
Okay. So how do you mean? Oh, I can't hear you. I think you're muted.
Hi, John. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. So my question is regarding like Paginated. We have talked about it a couple of weeks back. So it's like I've posted something in the chat box. You can have a look at it. So we are actually planning to use like RHEL Next or RHEL Preview instead of like a class for previous and next href length text. So which can help, you know, to navigate bots to the different pages of the website, like for Paginated especially.
Yeah, I don't think we would use the link rel previous rel next for right. search. So right. it might be that it works well for accessibility reasons, but for search, we really need those normal A links or like A elements, I don't know what they're actually called, the normal HTML links on the page.
Cool. So this might can helpful, right?
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah. Cool. Let's see. All right, Andrew.
Yeah, hello, John. Hello, everyone.
Hi.
So after CLS was updated in early June, well, it changed earlier, but we can see the numbers now. Well, the metric dropped significantly on our site, but Google claimed it won't be noticeable. But here we are seeing these bad changes for our site. Can you comment on that, please?
How do you mean the CLS dropped?
I mean, we can see that more pages on our site now are bad.
Okay.
Like 90% more.
And you think it's from the CLS change?
Yeah, I can see it on Google Search Console.
Yeah. I don't know. This is probably the kind of thing where you'd need to contact some of the folks from the Chrome side with regards to that change.
Yeah, I tried, but
yeah,
didn't happen.
So from my understanding, the change with CLS is basically that there's a defined window now, and that's something where you would only see positive effects there.
So I
suspect, especially if you're seeing changes that are significantly worse for your website, then I would try to look for other issues than the CLS change. You can also kind of double check the CLS change in that you take an older version of Chrome and run the Lighthouse within Chrome to test kind of the before and after situation. But I would be really surprised if a normal website saw a negative change for that, because it's really specifically for that use case where you have a single page app, and in the past we would just take that as one large session, and now we would split that up into separate sessions, and that essentially just makes it so that it's a lot harder to actually get higher numbers in CLS. So that feels like something where for a normal website that is not a single page app, you would not see any change anyway.
Might be a bug, because I see it well in Search Console, and it says it CLS.
Yeah, it's always possible that it can be a bug. So that's
so your recommendation is well to try to contact people from
Chrome. Yeah. I would definitely do that with the folks from Chrome, because they have the most experience in debugging issues around CLS, and they can like dive in a little bit more to understand what specifically is about this metric on your website that is kind of negatively affected here. I think there's like two or three people, I don't know the names offhand, who did a presentation around CLS at Google I/O recently. I will just try to ping those on Twitter.
Okay, thanks. Yes. And also, I have another question. What are the latest recommendations on pagination? I mean, do you need to block them, or what are the recommendations?
Recommendations on pagination. So it's something where we thought we would need to put some bigger recommendations out there, but we noticed that essentially it just works for most websites. There are kind of those two approaches that you can take. On the one hand, you can allow the paginated pages to be crawled and indexed. The other approach that people sometimes take is to block the paginated pages from being indexed. And the difference there depends mostly on the rest of your site structure. So if we can find all of the kind of detail pages that are linked from the paginated pages using other crawling within the website, then we don't need to see all of those paginated pages. Then it's fine to block everything from, I don't know, page 2 onwards. But if we need to go through those paginated pages to find your detail pages, then obviously we need to be able to crawl and index those pages. Mm-hmm. So that's something where sometimes you can test this out in a tool like Screaming Frog or any of the other kind of crawling tools where you can kind of, well, I mean, one way you could test this is to submit like a custom robots text file when you're crawling that locally. And and use that to block the paginated pages and then compare the end results of the crawl. Is the crawler still able to find all of your detail pages or not? And if the crawler can still find all of your detail pages and you're OK with the site structure with those kind of extra paginated pages blocked, then that's something you might want to consider.
OK. And if pages are in a sitemap?
We use the sitemap to help us to additionally find pages, but they don't replace it. So okay. I would not have pages only in the sitemap. I would always make sure there's kind of internal linking going to those pages.
Yeah, OK. That helps. Thank you.
Sure. All right, Promotash.
Hi, John.
Hi.
Hi. Hi. So, John, I have one question. Like, do Google search algos check the broken HTML or spelling mistakes or grammatical mistakes? Take into account in the search ranking? Suppose HTML tag is broken or spelling mistake or there is a grammatical mistake.
I mean, those are kind of different situations. For the most part, we don't care about HTML if it's broken or not. Most of the web does not have valid HTML, and we have to live with it. The main exceptions that I know of with broken HTML is if it's really broken in a very bad way, in the sense that if we can't recognize that a page is mobile-friendly, or if we can't recognize that this is a title or a heading, then obviously we can't do a lot of things with the HTML. That's kind of the one case there. And usually, those kind of broken pages are very broken in the browser, too. So if you look at the page and they don't even load properly, then probably you need to fix that. However, if you look at the page and it looks normally in the browser, then even if there's broken HTML, probably that's OK. With regards to spelling errors, grammatical errors, I think that's something that's a bit more of almost like a gray zone, in that on the one hand, we have to be able to recognize what a page is about. And if we can't recognize that because there's so many errors on the page in the text, then that makes it harder. The other aspect is also that we try to find really high-quality content on the web. And sometimes it can appear that a page is lower quality content because it has a lot of kind of grammatical and technical mistakes in the text. So that's something where, from my point of view, if you're aware of these kind of issues, I would just fix that. So I would almost say, like, spelling and grammar is probably for most websites a higher priority than broken HTML. But it's really hard to compare because they're very different things, in that one is more of a technical issue, the HTML side, and the other is more almost like a quality issue and something that users tend to see. So it's like kind of different things.
Okay. John, I have one more question. Okay.
Sure.
So let's suppose with the new recent, I hope the Google algo update is coming soon, like next week or so.
Which one?
Gets like told, like maybe it is coming next week, mid June, something. Okay.
Which,
so I have one question.
Which update?
Search algo page experience.
Page experience. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So with page experience update, the ranking of a site, suppose there are around 10 or 15 websites, they are all competing with in the same domain, obviously. So they are not far behind, but the top three or four websites loads in under 3 seconds. That the sites at suppose 8, 9, or 10th position are loading under like 1 second or 500, 600 milliseconds. So will we see some swap in the first page or no? How do you see?
I don't know.
Of page experience.
I don't know. there is no fixed weight. So that kind of makes it tricky, in that we do care about relevance a lot when it comes to search. And page experience, like a lot of other factors, it wouldn't override any of the relevance aspects. So if all of these pages are equally relevant, like if everything else is kind of the same, then maybe you would see some changes there. But if some of these pages are just really strong for these queries, then probably that will not shift a lot. The other thing is with the page experience update, we kind of differentiate between the different levels of the kind of the what is it, the scoring for the individual metrics between kind of like bad, needs improvement, and good. And usually the change for ranking starts to happen around needs improvement and until good. And if you're within the good range and you're a little bit better or a little bit slower, but you're still in the good range, then for us, that's kind of equivalent. Like if a page loads quickly enough, then that's quickly enough. And having one page load a couple hundred milliseconds faster than another one that is also good, that wouldn't change anything for us. So that's something where going from bad to good, that's where you'll see a change. But going from good to really good, that's not something that you would see. So kind of like with those metrics that you said, what was it? I think like 3 seconds and 1 second.
The first site actually loads it's more than 3 seconds, the at position one. But the sites ranking below are like in the good range. So maybe the site at top might be shifted to second or third, but the below positions will remain same if all are within the good range.
Yeah, it's really hard to predict. I think especially with some of the more competitive queries, sometimes the difference is very big between the individual ranking items, and it can happen that a site is a very strong number one site, and even if it's a bit slower, then it would still be like a number one site. So that's kind of tricky. It's something which is very obvious when you're searching for example, for a company name, where if someone is searching for your company's name, then you want your website to be shown, and users expect to find it. Even if your company's website is slow, then we wouldn't just show some random blogger's website instead of your company website just because it's a little bit faster. So like relevance still plays a fairly strong role there. But it really depends on the individual queries and how the sites are performing within those queries. So I would keep an eye on it. I mean, it sounds like an interesting situation from your side.
Yeah, John, if I get your like email, I don't know how to mail you. Like I could send my comparisons. Suppose my site loads under 500 milliseconds. OK, so I have competitors. Like they're much bigger companies. So in other aspects, I cannot compete with them. Like I cannot write like copywriter. I cannot engage 50 or 100 copywriters a day or publish 100 articles a day. But my product is as competitive as them. Okay.
Yeah.
And we test my site with Google. Test my site with Google. I have like subscribed to it, and I take all the opinions about it. So I have moved my site from an normal HTML output to AMP to AMP PWA. So it is now really very fast at the moment. Okay. So my competitors are around 3 to 4 times their speed is more. Like some are in the good range, but other mostly they rank within 4 to 4.5 seconds overall experience. Yeah. So while I test my site with Google and I add my competitors, so my rank is at 1 and everybody comes below it. Okay, so
yeah,
like, I don't know, like at least for, I might think win few keywords, like I might win because when Google started for speed, then I dedicated myself to speed. Means we have the quality product, we have the contents and everything. Now the competition is among the last 15 websites or 10. Like that is the space. Yeah.
I think it's always hard because there's so many things that go into play with regards to determining relevance. And especially if there are some really strong competitors in that space, then I would intuitively expect that to kind of be that they would continue to be showing. Like if, for example, I had a small bookstore locally and it was a really fast website, then I wouldn't expect my website suddenly to rank above the big online bookstores just because it's faster. But it kind of like how you mentioned, maybe there are queries where things are less competitive, where you're almost on an equal field with them, and then suddenly speed is the aspect that kind of like shifts your site above them. So that's something I wouldn't discount. That seems like an option, but yeah, it's really hard to say though.
John, just one doubt. So yesterday also I received some emails like there are a few websites who sound similar to my website. Okay. But they are ranking higher because everybody's name is almost similar. Suppose dog food example I'm giving. So dog food, food dog, or similar names of websites. Okay. So what happens is like I receive email from customers. My customer support team forwards them to me. Like we have a problem. They think that we are a different website. They are emailing us like our recurring payments are from your company. So sometimes they give you a negative feedback. Then on like on suppose review.io or any review website like Sitejabber or another website. Okay, then again you have to tell them like you are not my customer. Our site's name is similar. Okay, it's a different website. Okay, and should Google take action against websites which are like cheating customers and they have genuine people have many feedbacks about websites, but still they are ranking very high, but they have a feedback score of like 2, 2.1, 1, means below 3. There are many websites which are below 3, but they are selling products. And should Google take into action of some review websites like we have many Trustpilot or like Sitejabber, or there are many websites, there are genuine review websites where people put in their reviews. Bad review websites are also in ranking in the top 3. Then the customers are always misguided and they will come to us. And again, we have to guide them. This is not our website. You can check it. There is that similar website name that is this or something.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's like they're both directions that can happen, especially with regards to reviews, any kind of user generated content. It's like sometimes it's useful, sometimes it's not so useful. So it's good to be kind of cautious there. Cool. OK, Maurice.
Okay. Unmute myself. Hi, John. I've got a couple of questions. One of them is I do enterprise SEO for some largest brands, very big brands. And we had someone who was impersonating Instagram. Sort of a brand official. So when you search on Google, you get a brand Instagram. Stop it, phone. We've reported them via Facebook and they're down. But how long does the fact that an Instagram account has been removed take it to disappear from the search results? Because they're ranking for brand Instagram, and there's also a people also act. Does brand have an Instagram? And it's still linking to this now non-working Instagram account. So roughly how long would we expect it to take for that to be updated?
I mean, it's hard to say for like how long it takes for things to be updated in our index, essentially. And some things we recrawl and reprocess fairly quickly, so it's like gone in a couple of days. Other things do take a bit longer, so that's something where the site owner could take action on that. In this case, that would have to be someone from Instagram, but I don't know how feasible that is to get someone from Instagram to submit a removal request in Search Console. Maybe you can try, but otherwise, like that would just need to take its time to be kind of reprocessed. Okay. Well, you can also use the removal tool if you're not the site owner. So if the page is returning a 404, you can use the removal tool to kind of tell Google that actually this page is gone now. And what happens there is we check the page a couple of times to make sure that it's really not indexable. And then after, I think, a couple of days or maybe a week, we remove the page from the search results. So that might be an option to try out. Okay. that would remove that individual page from the search results. It wouldn't change the people also ask box, for example.
Yeah.
That's something that essentially needs to needs more time to be updated in the search results based on kind of the information that we have from crawling and indexing, because it's more indirect information there. The other thing where I don't know if it's relevant here or not is if you don't have an Instagram account yourself for that site, then of course when people search for that company plus Instagram, like we end up showing whatever we have. And if you don't kind of have content that we can show from your side, then like we will dig until we find something that we can show. And probably that's not that super useful for users.
Yeah, we do have official.
Okay.
Many official accounts for each country.
Okay.
There was one other thing is we're in the beverage industry, and I wanted to know, how does Safe Search work? Because, for example, some of our brands trigger Safe Search, and some don't. And we've done this for competitors. Say Jim Beam doesn't, but Johnny Walker might. So is there a way of getting a review of what's – this is obviously all alcohol stuff, so they're all age-gated. But is there guidelines on what isn't to trigger Safe Search? Because it seems to be a bit random between different brands, you know, both ours and the competitors as well.
Yeah. My understanding of how we handle Safe Search is it wouldn't trigger on things like that. It would trigger on things like adult content, where, I mean, potentially some of these adult beverages might have adult style imagery on the pages. Mm-hmm. Maybe that could be triggering it. But I don't think we will be triggering on things like it's an adult beverage, therefore we will put it into Safe Search, because that's not really kind of like the goal of Safe Search. So that to me would feel a little bit weird if just because of kind of adult orientation of the content, we would put it into Safe Search. Like, I don't know, we wouldn't put casino sites into Safe Search, for example.
No, it's interesting. I mean, maybe it is. Well, they do tend to use dance and other stuff, and I know they do. We do stuff with people like Anita, cross promos. Okay, well, I'll have to have a look and maybe see and look at whether it's the sort of the content.
Okay.
But that's an interesting take. Okay, thanks.
Sure.
John, can I just jump in on that? Sure. We've never had a problem with that at all. So you know our sites. So we sell everything from skydiving, bungee jumping, etc. And we've never had any issues with the wine tasting, whiskey tasting, even including like clay pigeon shooting with weapons and alcohol and not at the same time. And so we've never noticed any kind of problems with those. Those pages rank and index alongside all the others with the same sort of metrics. So I don't think it will be the Safe Search, which as far as I understand is running all the time anyway. It's not an algorithm that's on and off.
Well,
it's always filtered anyway. So you'd probably see it across the board rather than on specific instances.
We've done A/B tests like running filtered, non-filtered, and the non-Safe Search, if you turn it off, we get it. It's just that some of our brand managers have found the problem where they search for their brand and it's not position one.
So another thing that might be playing in, I don't know if this is the case, but there are specific meta tags that you can put on your pages, which we have specifically for adult content imagery, where you're kind of specifying this page is for a certain age group. I forgot what they're actually called. But we have them documented, I think, on the Safe Search documentation and also in the Images Best Practices Guide. And it might be that you have these meta tags on your pages to say, it's like, oh, this is an adult beverage. And we look at the meta tag and say, oh, you're saying it's adult content, therefore we'll use Safe Search filtering. So that might be something to double check, too.
OK. Don't remember seeing them, but I'll have a look. Okay.
Cool. All right. Maybe I'll just go through some of the submitted questions and then come back to all of you. It's like so many raised hands. I also have a bit more time afterwards, so if any of you want to stick around longer, we can take a look there. Let's see. Some of these questions I have answers for. Some of them I don't really have great answers for. Since the first question here is probably one I don't have an awesome answer for. We see quite a domination of white label sites in our market, which is essentially like someone hosting their content on a newspaper website's content. I'd like to ask why Google doesn't take action against those competitors in terms of ranking adjustment. In our case, it's quite clear that the reason why certain pages are ranking in the first positions of high volume commercial queries are that they're hosted on authoritative website, often notorious online newspaper brands that have nothing to do with our competitors' core business. So I don't know. We see this question every now and then come up, and we do try to focus on this a little bit in our algorithms. But I think one aspect that some of these websites are kind of losing out on is that by mixing this kind of content together with their news content, it makes it a lot harder for us to understand how to treat their actual news content. So from our point of view, it seems like a kind of an iffy or temporary strategy to try to host a lot of unrelated content on your website just in the hope that it also attracts traffic. But in general, what I would recommend doing in cases like this, where you see this happening, is to send us some examples where we can take a look at it and really recognize that the quality of the search results for this specific query is bad. And by examples, I mean things that are commonly used by users when they search, and where it's very clear that the top search results are not really that awesome for users. That's the kind of thing we can bring back to the search quality team, and they'll try to find solutions for that kind of in an algorithmic way. So it wouldn't be the case that we would pass this on, and then the search quality team would click a red button, and suddenly these sites would disappear from the internet. But we would try to find an algorithmic solution to make sure that the ranking for these kind of queries is improved so that users have a better experience in search. And sending us examples that kind of show where we could be doing a better job, that helps a lot more than to say, it's like, oh, there are lots of white label sites out there, and I don't like them. So send us something explicit where we can pass that on to the team. When citing scientific research references on medical pages, should we ideally do it in the body text or at the bottom of the page? I see some pages have a text box appear when hovering over a link reference and say it's trustworthy. Is that recommended? You can reference other sites in any kind of way that you like. There's no specific format that we recommend or require. Essentially, if you want to link to other kind of content to give references or more context for your own content, then I would just make sure that it's linked in a way that we can pick it up as a link. So in particular, if you're using fancy JavaScript that only triggers and shows a link if you're hovering over something, then potentially, we wouldn't see that because Googlebot doesn't hover over links or doesn't hover over elements on a page. But if it's a normal HTML link that's embedded in the page somewhere, be it in the body or in the footer or wherever, then that's something we can potentially pick up and use to better understand your content, better understand the other content, and kind of the relationship, the context in between.
John, may I just jump in here?
Sure.
Lena is starting to work on her web project, and she's starting to do the citations a little bit different and starting with page one and then moving on. Would Google then recompute the ranking for page one as soon as it's done, or would Google see, okay, the whole project is now improved for like 1% and respect the whole thing, or is it page per page that you consider?
How do you mean? it, like just changing the link from like the body to the footer, or changing the linking completely on the page, or
I don't know. Maybe she'll invite authority persons to give a few comments on a post, and would Google then say, okay, well, the rest of the project is not as brilliant, but this page is, and therefore this single page will be ranked higher in comparison to the rest of her web project? Or would Google just rather consider the whole internet site as one thing?
I think we would probably see a mix. So on the one hand, we do index things page by page. We rank things page by page. But there's some signals that we can't reliably collect on a per page basis, where we do need to have a bit of a better understanding of the overall site. And quality kind of falls into that category. So in a case where you're significantly improving the quality of one page of a website, then that does help that one page to improve a bit in ranking. But kind of the overall effect of the whole website's quality, that's something that takes a bit of time and where we really have to see that, OK, overall, all of these things have changed. So kind of like more than just that one page. And then we can kind of see that website as a whole as being a little bit better with regards to quality. So that's something like one example that we've sometimes seen is when a website used to have a lot of adult content on it. For example, maybe you have a forum and people post lots of really weird things there, and you start cleaning that up. Then over time, we will recognize that, OK, these individual pages don't need to be filtered by Safe Search, but the overall website still does. And over time, we'll see that actually the majority of the website doesn't need to be filtered by Safe Search anymore. So we can kind of turn that off for the whole website. And that's kind of the shift, I think, that you'd like to head. Doing that on a per-page basis and waiting to see what happens when you make one change on a page, that probably doesn't make sense. But you probably see like incremental changes over time. And then at some point, the overall quality algorithms will say, oh, overall, the website is significantly better. And then you'll see a bigger jump.
Excellent. Thank you.
Sure.
John?
Yes.
Yeah, maybe add something to the question about the references for medical websites.
Sure.
We have recently worked on a pharmacy store here in our country, and we came to the conclusions that it's, as an addition to what you said, it's important the resources to be up to date. It's kind of the things that is really mandatory. And the second thing that usually someone should have in mind is the top targets around the links of these references should be good enough, because we might have a problem with the mobile friendliness at some point. And no. Yes, and Nick, you have something to add also?
Yeah, and not medical related website, but we start years ago one project with based on React, and the JavaScript is not rendering well. So the Google can't find all links. So be sure that Google can find all backlinks or external links about that.
Yeah, yeah. I think then that kind of goes into the direction of like we need to be able to see those HTML links. And if you're doing something super fancy with regards to links on a page, then maybe we don't see them. And if you want Google to see them, then double check that we can actually do that. Cool. A few months back, you mentioned the possibility of giving badges in the search results to sites tested green across the board for Core Web Vitals. We haven't heard about them since then. What's the status? I don't know. I noticed in our kind of communications around Core Web Vitals and page experience that the badges have silently kind of disappeared from the mentions. So it's possible that we did some experiments and saw that they weren't as useful as we thought, or maybe it's something where the team still needs to figure out some details and kind of improve things there before we can roll those out broadly. I think the important part with any kind of element in the search results is that it's really useful for users and it's understandable for users. And especially speed and performance is something that is sometimes really hard to convey to users in a way that they understand what it means with a symbol in the search results. So with AMP, I think that was kind of useful because they were slightly different pages and they were handled slightly differently. But if it's just that a site is fast or is slow, it's like, what kind of symbol do you put in the search results that makes it clear for users that it's fast or it's slow? So that's something where, I don't know, maybe we still need to figure something out, but I don't have any kind of updated news on that. There's a news site that doesn't show up in the news tab of the search results using a site query command. I don't have any insights into Google News. I can't really help with regards to that. Let's see. My site is a publisher that has multiple languages and serves content to multiple countries. Currently, we're having an issue with an international indexation of affiliate linked recommendation shopping content, where English language articles designated for countries are not showing in those countries, especially in Discover. They have hreflang on them that point to themselves with the country code added. We designate the country in the HTML tag. Wow, that's a really complicated question. I suspect we'd probably need to take a look at some of the specifics there. So what I would recommend doing here is posting in the Search Central Help Forum and including the actual examples of what it is that you have implemented, the kind of queries that you're looking at, and the URLs from your website where you think there might be a problem. So that's something where I feel like there's so much detail in the question here, it's really hard to kind of come up with a simple answer that tells you what you need to do, because it sounds like a lot of these things are kind of OK. Let's see. I had a server error on some of my pages. When I checked a few pages shown the example, they worked just fine. I also used the validate option a few times, but Google keeps marking the pages with an error. It's been a month since then. I've waited for Googlebot to index these pages with no success. This has affected my organic impressions and clicks. Is there anything I can do here? So we don't invent errors on pages. When Googlebot checks a page and there is a server error, then we really see a server error there. And it might be that this is something that is temporary on your website. And if it's temporary, then with one of the future crawls, we will kind of try that again. And if the error is gone, then we can index the page normally again. So that's something where if you see these kind of issues come up regularly, and in particular, if you use the validate feature in Search Console and the validation comes back and says there's still server errors, then that's something I would take up with your hoster and try to see if there's something that they can do to diagnose this issue, to double check what might be happening here, to give you a sense of scope of how many URLs does this affect, actually. Because sometimes it can be tricky, where if Googlebot is crawling millions of pages from your website and 100 of them have a server error, then probably that's irrelevant, because like there are always some errors somewhere. But if Googlebot is crawling 200 pages from your website and 100 of those are server errors, then that's a little bit more concerning. That's something you probably want to fix and make sure that it doesn't happen. So that's kind of the direction I would head there. It's not something that Google can fix. It's really something that you need to fix on your side with regards to the hosting. How are desktop and mobile rankings different when we've already been switched to mobile-first indexing? So mobile-first indexing is specifically about that technical aspect of indexing the content. And we use a mobile Googlebot to index the content. But once a content is indexed, the ranking side is still kind of completely separate. And it's normal that desktop and mobile rankings are different. Sometimes that's with regards to things like like speed. Sometimes that's with regards to things like mobile friendliness. Sometimes that's also with regards to the different elements that are shown in the search results page. So for example, if you're searching on your phone, then maybe you want more local information because you're on the go. Whereas if you're searching on a desktop, maybe you want more images or more videos shown in the search results. So we tend to show like a different mix of different search results types. And because of that, it can happen that the ranking or the visibility of individual pages differs between mobile and desktop. And that's essentially normal. That's a part of how we do ranking. It's not something where I would say it would be tied to the technical aspect of indexing the content.
John, one follow-up about it.
Sure.
So in desktop, if there is some ranking and the same content is in mobile also and technical issues are also not happening, and in mobile device, if the ranking is down, does it clearly mean it is because of mobile friendliness work which is supposed to be done or page speed?
I mean, we don't use the page experience update. I don't think that's rolled out yet. So it wouldn't be from there. But mobile friendliness is definitely a factor. There might also be other factors that play in there, specifically with regards to mobile and desktop. So these are kind of the differences that are always a bit around with regards to mobile and desktop. Search results, sometimes it's also just because it's like a different device or a different connection to the internet, so we use different settings essentially for personalization.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Why I was just trying to understand was because sometimes it does happen in our work and we have to focus on some specified things like this is because of this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure. Wow, we're kind of running low on time already. Maybe I'll just go to like one or two last live questions, and then I can pause the recording and we can continue on if any of you want to stick around longer. Let's see, Mohammed, I think, is next.
Hi, John.
Hi.
My question is related to focus keywords and its optimization for the title. I just want to ask, is it mandatory to have the focus keyword in the same order for a page title or blog title? Let's suppose I have a keyword app convert, a keyword is focus keyword is convert app to mobile, but we cannot put these keywords as a title. So for the optimization, like we can convert it as a convert your WooCommerce store to mobile app. So here in title, focus keywords are not in the same order, and plugins like yours does not accept it as a good practice. So what's your suggestion? Can we use it in a way or not?
Sometimes from our point of view, we use titles primarily to understand what the page is about and to show in the search results. And it's something where sometimes the order of words in a query or the order of words on a piece of text does matter, and sometimes it doesn't matter so much. So that's something where sometimes it's useful, sometimes it's not useful. I think using tools that help you to analyze the content on your site and give you suggestions is a great idea. And I don't know the Yoast plugin, so it's hard for me to say how they do it. But I would always see these as tools that give you information, not as a list of requirements. And it's something where the plugin might give you information and say, well, this is potentially not great. And you need to look at that and say, well, I don't care what you think. I know better because I'm the human and you're the computer program. And that's kind of like how you need to use all of these SEO tools, to really use them to get information. And then the information that you use might be slightly different, where you're saying, it's like, well, I know that I can't put these keywords in this title without it looking really bad. Or maybe you'll say, well, OK, this is a good suggestion. I'll do that.
Okay, that means we have to test as per the situations.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's something I would never blindly follow any of these tools. Even with Search Console, if it tells you that something is an error, it doesn't mean that you have to fix it or doesn't mean you have to change it. You can look at that and say, well, it should be an error, and that's fine.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. All right. Let me take a break here with the recording. Thank you all for sticking around. Thank you for watching this on YouTube. If you're watching it on YouTube, maybe we'll see you in one of the future Hangouts. And yeah, with that, hopefully we'll see each other again. All right.